And a good Monday morning to you. It is Robbie and Rex Road, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Ryan Porth in for Robbie Stanley this morning. He has the day off. He will be back tomorrow. Joe, how we doing?
Doing all right. Came in on a little bit of a snowy ride, but got here okay. All good with you?
People need to learn how to drive in the snow. I mean, even though the roads weren't like slick or bad, they were still driving awful this morning.
Like
just
doing what?
Awful. Driving like 40 miles an hour on the interstate.
Oh.
Not knowing what is going on with the snow. I almost got in two accidents because of slow driving and just incompetent driving on the way in. So people just need to learn how to drive in the snow.
Yeah. First of all, from everything I saw, and I was in some areas where sometimes the roads get bad quickly, everything was fine. So if you're going that slow on the interstate, you are a hazard.
You should not be on the interstate.
Just don't be on the interstate.
Exactly.
Yeah, just go find an alternate route and go slow and feel better.
Exactly. So other than that, it's been a great morning.
Good. And Elijah, you got in okay?
Oh, yeah. Relatively incident-free. Yeah, usually, if it snows a little bit, the trek from Murfreesboro on 24 is a pain in the rear. But no, today was fine.
I mean, it doesn't have to snow for that trek to be a pain in the rear.
Very true. It's a pain in the rear most every time I get on it, especially coming back, if it's like 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. It's a nightmare, and I spend half my
24?
Life there. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The hottest rivalry in sports, Elijah versus I-24 traffic, and I'm on the receiving end of it.
Any day that ends in Y, it can be a hazardous drive up and down 24. But that's neither here nor there. It was a big weekend locally here with some sports teams, Joe. Don't know how much you got to watch of all the different things going on Saturday night. Saturday night was a hectic night for a lot of teams locally. The Preds, Vols, Vandy, Belmont, Caleb Plant, retaining his IBF super middleweight title, just dominated Caleb Truax. It was a busy, busy Saturday night. So how did you take in all the games on Saturday night?
Yeah. Well, of course, I always want them, can you guys space it out and you start here and then 2 hours later you start there, and then I've got kid basketball on Saturday too. So it was a heck of a day. But I got to see all of the Vols game against Kansas, and that was a really impressive win for the Vols. Very good win.
Never in doubt, 80-61.
Yeah, it's not a great Kansas team. I mean, this is not like your classic Bill Self Kansas team. He is not – his magical recruiting powers have maybe not been quite as good recently with all that's gone on. But still, good team. I mean, it's a top 15 team, and the Vols handled them. So that was a great sign. I don't think the Vols are going to shoot like that every night. It was one of those, you shoot really well, and you can't necessarily count on it, but the defense was great. Got to see a lot of – then you had Vanderbilt and the Preds and Belmont all kind of going on at the same time, so flipping around.
One TV for it all? Or
well,
do you have two TVs?
So it's TV, it's laptop, and it's phone. So, we have at times done the two-screen special situation, but typically that's not. So obviously you can use different screens. So, yeah, I mean, I got three available, with the laptop, the phone. Kind of kept it, the main was on the Preds, which, again, through halfway through that game, I'm like, gosh, they're just getting outclassed by these top teams. I did like their fight, but, the penalty kill again is not great.
But the power play bailed them out with a pair of goals.
Yeah.
So they lose 4-3 to the Tampa Bay Lightning. The penalty kill gives up a pair. The power play scores a pair. So the special teams were washed out.
Right.
That game, to me, came down to a second period that just got away from them. And that game Saturday night felt like a game that we saw way too much of last season, where for 40 minutes they played pretty darn well. But there was a 20-minute period where everything went to hell in a handbasket, and that's what happened in the second period against the Lightning.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where, look – Stamkos is about as lethal as it gets from the left circle. There's a couple of those where you want Pekka to get the save, but it's also you couldn't place those shots better either.
Yeah.
They know exactly where they're going in it. So,
I thought Pecorino actually played pretty well despite giving up four goals.
Yeah, I mean, he was under siege. I mean, he made a lot of big saves. He'd probably still like a couple back. But yeah, I mean, they came back. You feel like because I'm thinking about Dallas when it's 4-1. And, you know, they get the first goal. It's like, oh, wow, they actually score first, playing with a lead. Didn't matter. That team is so good. And it's amazing, even though you mentioned the two power play goals, watching them on the power play, watching the Lightning on the power play, how fluid they are and, like, just so confident. It's like they know exactly when to pass or shoot or whatever. Like, it's like full command on the power play versus, you know, the Preds still trying to figure out what they're doing. But maybe we're seeing at least some progress there. Vanderbilt gets a big win.
Big win.
93 points.
Their first SEC win of the season. They beat South Carolina at home.
They might have more wins ahead, too. They've got a schedule here that lends itself to, maybe more of this. But, yeah, Scottie Pippen Jr. has been absolutely tremendous all year. He's just a really fun player to watch. When you get Maxwell Evans scoring 29, you know, that's the outlier. I mean, when you get that, now you got something going. Dylan Dessou is a really good player. It was actually a good week for Vanderbilt after, you know, last week, really poor performance. Jerry Stackhouse is angry, says some things, you know, calling out some players and things. People didn't like that. They did respond. You gotta look at how they played in the two games since then. They gave Florida at least somewhat of a challenge, and Florida's playing really well. And then they get this win, so that was good for them. And then Belmont, 18-1. 18-1 and down 10 at Murray State. Not a great Murray State team, but it's Murray State. They still have a lot of talent, and they find a way to come back and win that game. 18-1. It's a special year for that team. They're 12-0 in the OVC. They just won two huge road games. They got a chance to be 26-1. I mean, I know I just totally jinxed them, and they'll lose like three of these games.
There is no such thing as a jinx.
All right. Well, I'm going to remember that.
Okay.
Because people blame me for jinxing a lot.
There is no such thing as a jinx. That is the hill that I will die on.
You know, in fact, Belmont grad Emily Proud thanked me for the reverse jinx on Twitter Saturday because I said, oh, it looks like Belmont's going to have their first conference loss, you know, down 10. And so then they won. Is there such thing as a reverse jinx?
No.
Okay. There's no jinx either way. Okay.
It's just either you speak too soon or, yeah, either way.
Yeah, okay.
There's a difference between speaking too soon and actually jinxing something, well, in my mind.
All right, well, Belmont is going to win out and win the national championship.
All right.
When Morehead State bounces them in the first round of the OVC tournament, we'll revisit this discussion and then pinpoint the exact moment in which Joe derailed the Belmont Bruins basketball season.
6:07 a.m. on February 1st.
If they're 26-1 and that happens, are they still in the tournament?
They have to be. They have to be, but you never know because the NCAA selection committee has always kind of screwed over those type of mid-major teams that fall to a really bad team in their conference tournament. Example, MTSU Conference USA a couple years ago.
Oh, yeah. They should have been in.
Had the most road wins of any team in the country, got upset by Southern Miss, and still got kept out of the tournament, and Oklahoma got to go in despite having a losing record in the calendar year.
So Belmont now has the most wins in the nation. They've won 15 straight games. Dating back to last season, they've won 30 of their last 31 games. This is a team that you said last week could be the highest-ranked Belmont team, highest-seeded Belmont team going into a tournament they've ever had.
Yeah, although it's – yeah. So they've had a couple 11s. Now it's hard to break into – as you know, like 10 is tough. But if they go like 29-1, what do you think, 10? Nine?
I would say they'd squeeze themselves into the 8-9 game. Even
eight,
as an 8,
game,
they could even go in as an 8 that way. But if you run the table and your only loss is early in the season, they didn't have like this, I guess, treacherous non-conference schedule.
Right.
But like,
well,
you can't
they
hold
should
that,
have. But,
yeah, yeah, you can't hold that against them this year. You know, but if you're still able to win and win on all your conference games, say they run the table in the OVC, I mean, they're still playing back-to-backs. They're still playing the same teams. Throughout the entire season, it's still pretty impressive to be able to do, considering there's still a lot of talent in the OVC. The OVC is not like maybe like what the A-Sun is or anything like that. The OVC is not a terrible conference.
Yeah. So We got Casey on later. Casey Alexander.
Yep, 9:30. So that will be good. Caleb Plant. Did you get a chance to watch any of that fight against Caleb Truax?
I did not.
It was not even a fight. Even though it went the distance, Caleb Plant, it was a unanimous decision. I mean, he just completely dominated Truax. Truax didn't have he did not have a prayer to win that fight unless he knocked out Plant, which that you just knew the whole time it just was not going to happen.
Is there anything on the horizon in terms of a real challenger for him?
I honestly don't know. I don't keep up with it enough to know you know what's coming up next. But Caleb Plant, the Nashville native, retaining his IBF super middleweight title Saturday night. And speaking of Saturday night, after what we thought I thought the sports night was done, and then Adam Schefter drops a huge Twitter bomb, if you want to call it that. It's not a Woj bomb because it's not Adrian Wojnarowski breaking the news, but
Adam bomb.
Sure. Wow. Matthew Stafford going from Detroit to the LA Rams in exchange for Jared Goff, 2 first-round picks, and a 3rd-round pick. Yeah. How surprised were you, Joe, when you saw that tweet come out?
Well, I'm not surprised that the Rams and Lions made a trade. I figured that, they were one of the teams in there. Certainly we know the Colts had some discussion with the Lions and, man, should have tried really hard to get Matthew Stafford. But that is a haul. That's a haul. It's also, you're taking Goff's deal. I mean, it's almost like one of those picks is like, also take Goff, please. Thank you. And here's another pick for you. That's a big, big deal. That is a big trade. And, of course, we have bigger ones coming, too, by the way. Pretty amazing. This is like the best NFL offseason ever, potentially.
And I thought last offseason was just that. When Brady, Phillip Rivers.
I know.
You had other quarterbacks change teams. But this is going to trump that one.
This is. Especially if Aaron Rodgers. But he won't go anywhere. I think that's kind of
cooled
down.
He's
staying in Green Bay. But, that's a lot. You think about the Rams. So the Rams, what they gave up. Of course, Titans fans know well, to get Jared Goff, and now what they're giving up to get rid of Goff. But I tell you what, I really think Stafford and the Rams, I think that could be a contender.
Well, they better
contender.
They better do it in the next few years because the Rams are about to go 7 straight years without a first-round pick. Between the trades that they've made, Jalen Ramsey, I forget the other trade that they gave up a first-round pick. Was it Brandon Cooks? That they gave up a first-round pick for?
I think it was, yeah.
Or that sounds right.
So Cooks, Ramsey, and now Stafford. They better win in the next
Goff,
few years.
If you're, I don't know if Goff factors
in. Well,
yes,
that one.
But going back. Wow. That's a lot. I mean, they're going for it. But I think they have – I mean, with that defense, Goff is really interesting. There's been a lot of debate about Goff since that trade. Like, the dude's 25. Look at his numbers. I mean, we're just going to discard this guy, but gosh, I just don't think he's that good. And I know that Goff and McVay, their relationship was pure toxic. So, I'm excited for Matthew Stafford. I believe I'm strongly in the camp that he could be great with the right team and can win a Super Bowl with that team. I know a lot of people say, okay, a lot of empty calories, all those big numbers for bad teams. But, when you don't ever have a run game or a defense to support you as a quarterback, that's tough. You got to have at least one of those things. He's had neither. I think as much as the Rams gave up, I think that this might be their ticket to the Super Bowl. And also, I know the Lions will completely screw up this haul that they got. Sorry, Lions fans. My son, my kid's so excited about this. All these picks, Dad, yeah. Let's see how they do. Let's see how they do, Brennan.
So what's he going to do with his Stafford jersey now?
It's vintage, It's a vintage
jersey. It's now a throwback?
It's a throwback. That's right. He's still got his Kirk Cousins Washington jersey. So, I don't know. Is he going to get a Goff? I don't know. Are they going to keep Goff? Are they going to move Goff to the Colts?
You, as a father, cannot let Brennan get a Jared Goff Lions jersey.
Actually, it's kind of funny, if you think about it. It's a classic. Get a middling player's jersey for your team that wishes it could be middling.
Well, we'll get into that trade a little bit later. We also have some Titans stuff to get into later this hour as well. But There is one concern that I have around the Nashville Predators that seems to be percolating with each passing game, and we'll get to that coming up next. I'm Ryan Porthen for Robbie Stanley this morning alongside Joe Rexroad. You are listening to Robbie and Rexroad live on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Welcome back into the show. Ryan Porthen for Robbie Stanley this morning. Robbie has the day off. He'll be back tomorrow. Joe, the Preds lose 4-3 to the Tampa Bay Lightning Saturday night. It was 4-1 after two periods, and the Preds scored twice late in the third period, a little too late to get the offense revved back up. They came very close to tying it in the waning seconds there.
Duchesne, so close.
Right. He is so snake-bitten.
Yeah.
I mean,
I
hate it for him. So one of the things that has really stood out to me about this Preds team, not only watching the Preds, but watching other teams as well. I've been watching a lot of hockey here in the first couple weeks, and for more purposes than just, you know, my love for hockey. And something that has become very evident with this Predators team that I feel like is a growing concern, at least for me, is how hard they have to work to score goals. Like, they get a lot of chances, but they have to work so hard to score goals, especially at like 5-on-5 or even the power play, when you compare it to other teams that can score almost at will. I mean, yes, they were playing Ottawa last night, but Edmonton puts up, you know, 5 goals in the first period against the Senators last night on, you know, the back end of a back-to-back for them. They score 8 for the game. Some teams, offense just comes so easy to them, and it is not that way for this Predators team. And when you look at them go up against a team like Tampa Bay, it becomes even more evident, because every time the Lightning put out a new line out there, whether it's the first, second, third, or fourth line, you feel like they are a threat to score. Whereas with the Predators, and it's hard to compare them against Tampa Bay, but I'm comparing Nashville versus a lot of other teams in the league in this discussion. It feels like they have such a hard time manufacturing goal scoring that it's going to be hard for them to put together a big run this year of like 5 straight wins or 8 of 10. Like, they're going to have to really chip away at this thing and win like 2 of 3, collect points here and there in overtime for me to be a playoff team, because offense just comes so hard for them.
Yeah, nothing surprising, right?
Right.
I mean, obviously, we just mentioned Duchesne. There's a guy who you want to see get going, get some goals. I mean, Forsberg's been hot here, too. I mean, so imagine this team as constructed, as we see it, and then when Forsberg goes into a drought.
Right.
It's kind of scary. And the thing is, you know, like, Cunning, I think, has come in and done some good things. Cousins has, I mean, some of their additions have, like, have shown some positive signs, but I agree. I mean, it's a struggle. I mean, did you keep up with all the lines switching around Saturday? Because there was quite a bit of it.
It was,
I know some of it was just trying to double shift Forsberg here and there, but he was moving stuff around.
He was. It was hard to keep track of almost throughout that game.
But that's a sign of a coach trying to find some answers, right?
Exactly. This early in the season in, what was it, game 7? Game 8? I think it was game 8. Game 8 Saturday night, correct. They're now 4-4 on the season. Yeah, I mean, look, it was evident at times Saturday night between the Preds and the Lightning just how wide that gap is between those two teams. I mean, you mentioned it last segment how Pecorine was under siege at times. Now, there were other times where the Preds looked like they could hold their own better than it looked sometimes against Dallas.
Yeah.
But the gap is pretty wide between the Preds and the Lightning. And you can say that about a lot of teams, but and, you know, the Tampa Bay Lightning. But offense just comes so hard for this team. I wonder how they're going to be able to string together a lot of wins.
If they're going to do it, I mean, certainly some of them are going to be more of the 2-1 variety, right? Which is possible.
And you go back to the two Chicago games. They had to scratch and claw to win 2 games against a bad team that was without some key players already. They had a couple other key players join the COVID list right before that 2-game series, and they still had a hard time winning those games. Which it, the Roman Josi going overtime in game one of that back-to-back, fantastic. It was nice to see them pull out that shootout win against the Blackhawks to sweep the two-game set. But you shouldn't be giving the Blackhawks 2 points out of that series when you win both games. And, you know, Nick Cousins, the only way you score in regulation in that game Wednesday night, Nick Cousins gets a break to go his way, you know, gets a two-on-one, and he puts it in the back of the net. But when they're getting other chances, they're just flat out not finishing. And I don't know if that's just bad luck this early in the season that those chances aren't finishing, or if this is just how it's going to be. If this is just how it's going to be, it's going to be a struggle for them to separate out of whatever pack they'll be in throughout this season fighting for a playoff spot.
Yeah.
We knew that coming in.
Yes.
But that has been a clear observation of mine in the first 8 games of this season, is just the lack of offensive firepower and how much they're going to struggle against good teams.
I mean, I really think through 8 games, they're pretty close to kind of what you thought on paper, right? Once we figured out this is going to be the team, it's like, okay, well, they're not going to – I mean, what you hope is, I still think, you know, that top line can sustain – and, you know, Forsberg and Arvidsson are producing, but can sustain better than they have. And we know that's in them. And then you hope that, obviously, Granlund, who has played really well here with Duchesne, can find something. I mean, Duchesne and Johansson right now having no goals through 8 games. That's not good.
You can't have that.
But you can also look at that and say, okay, are they playing well? Are they getting opportunities? Is that figure to change? I mean, that's probably your, if you want to spin it optimistically, is that, yeah, Duchesne is, I mean, he's had a lot of chances. I mean, look, the guy has been snake bitten to an extent. Johansson, it's
less
still,
so.
Yeah, it's still like, let's see a little more.
Right.
Let's see a little more.
And there comes a time where I don't really, you know, care for the whole snake bitten argument of.
Yeah, at some point you got
to
produce.
At some point you have to score, you have to produce. And the fact that Johansson and Duchesne still don't have a goal through 8 games, it's like, all right, you're paying $16 million a season to these guys.
For 6 points.
Yeah.
In 8 games.
Yeah.
Combined. That's
you
not
know,
enough.
Ryan Johansson's assist the other night comes on Matthew Olivier's power play goal. Who would have had that?
I like what I'm seeing from Olivier, by the way, in a variety of
by
ways.
By the way, he ends up with blood all over his visor, all over his jersey, in a scrum behind the net, and then he's the one ending up getting a penalty in the third period Saturday night.
That was interesting.
The refs were not good Saturday night.
No.
And how they were at least consistent. They called bad penalties on both teams.
And how about Fabbro?
Yeah.
Dante Fabbro
dropping
mixing it
the
up.
Mitts.
And he got a couple good shots in, too.
Yeah.
And then the fight was over, and it was like, oh, now he looks again like a 12-year-old. But, hey, he fought like a grown man.
I was 1 week late with my called shot of a fight. You remember
I
had the called
right.
shot of
in
Pred Stars that there would be a fight?
Who knew that Pred's Lightning would be the chippy?
It's going to get chippy tonight.
Tonight could get interesting.
Yeah. The third period definitely got interesting on that front Saturday night. So tonight, the Preds and Lightning again in Tampa Bay. Pregame at 5, faceoff at 6. All the action heard right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hard to know what to expect outside of what we really saw Saturday night. I mean, the Preds looked good at times. They looked overwhelmed at times. That's probably how a lot of those games against Tampa Bay are going to go, even though they were 13-1-3 in their previous 17 games against Tampa Bay going into that game.
Yeah. Doesn't mean much now.
No.
You know, you've got to in a game when you play them, and you're going to play them a lot. I mean, you have to get your offense going, because, like, you're not going to hold those guys down for 60 minutes. They're just too good.
Right.
They're just too skilled and too together. So, Saros we expect tonight in goal.
This is a game from UC Saros where I would like to see him really rise to the occasion and maybe steal 2 points for you. I've always thought that UC Saros, for the most part, has been a product of the play in front of him. If they play well in front of him, he looks good. The stats look good for him. If the team does not play well in front of him, it usually ends up poorly for Soros. That's how I've always kind of viewed Soros for the most part.
He's not outside himself like Rene at times, just completely taking over a game.
Right. When Pecorino was in his prime, Pecorino stole you a lot of games. UC Soros doesn't steal you a lot of games. I want to see UC Soros rise to the occasion tonight. It would be really good for the Preds to go down there and split with the Lightning. After getting swept by Dallas, you don't want to get swept by Tampa Bay 1 week later. You just don't.
Yeah, and that's what it might take. It might take Soros standing on the head a little bit.
Absolutely. Well, Friday afternoon, my blood was boiling. It's not boiling as much, but the Titans made an announcement Friday that has me all fired up, and we'll get to that. Coming up next, he's Joe Rexroad. I'm Ryan Porth, in for Robbie Stanley this morning on Robbie and Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rexroad, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Ryan Porth, in for Robbie Stanley this morning alongside Joe Rexroad. Joe, let's introduce our poll question of the day, shall we?
Let's do it.
In hindsight, who do you blame more for the Tennessee Titans' defensive struggles in the 2020 season, the coaches or the players? And right now, 77 votes are in, 65% going with the coaches, 35% going with the players.
Ooh, okay. Is this relevant to the news dump that we got Friday after the show?
Yes.
Like people upset? Like
probably.
They're so upset about that they're going to blame the coaches more than the players.
Well, I think a lot of people blame the coaches anyway for this season. Not in hindsight. In real time, they were blaming the coaches, whether it be Mike Vrabel or Shane Bowen. And it came out Friday that the Titans are elevating Shane Bowen to defensive coordinator from outside linebackers coach. Now, after the season, Mike Vrabel, after all this mystery, all offseason, all season, of who's really running the defense, Mike Vrabel admitted, I think it was to you, Joe? Was it your question or somebody else's question? I forget. It was.
I'll take the credit for
okay.
it.
Okay. You take the credit for everything anyway.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Just
so
give me the credit.
As long as it's good. Mike Vrabel admitted after the season that Shane Bowen was essentially the defensive coordinator without having the title. And he told you, I know it was you, Joe, that we make too big a deal out of titles. He didn't know this was going to become such a big thing. It took on a life of its own.
Right. He's like, I guess I apologize, which is basically saying you guys are a bunch of drama queens out here making a big deal out of something that's not a big deal.
Right. Well, it was a big deal Friday that the Titans officially announced Shane Bowen as the defensive coordinator, also announcing Todd Downing, offensive coordinator, being promoted from tight ends coach. We knew that Friday morning during the show that was going to be the case. But Shane Bowen, defensive coordinator. Now, I am sure that Shane Bowen is a great guy. I'm sure there are things behind closed doors that are impressive about Shane to both the players and the coaches, and to Mike Vrabel specifically. And maybe, just maybe, it gets better in 2021 versus what we saw in 2020. But Shane Bowen should not be the defensive coordinator for the Tennessee Titans. He should not be the guy. And I was so disappointed, so irate Friday, that Mike Vrabel promoted Shane Bowen after Shane Bowen was essentially the DC last season. The defense was horrific most of last season. It got worse in yards allowed. It got worse in rushing yards against. It got worse in passing yards against. It got worse in scoring defense. And it was historically bad in third down defense. It went from 36% to 51% under Shane Bowen's direction as the quasi-DC.
And 43 sacks down to 19.
Brutal. And that's not – look, the number is one thing, but the lack of pressure on the quarterback – was another thing. Like, you couldn't even rattle the quarterback. You couldn't even get in his kitchen half the time. So, or most of the time. And they promote him to DC. I half expected it because it's Mike Vrabel, and Mike Vrabel has this thing about him of my way or the highway, but I was extremely disappointed that Mike Vrabel ended up going with Shane Bowen. And look, if this defense does not improve, this is going to be a black eye on Mike Vrabel's resume as Titans head coach.
I don't disagree with anything you said. I would guess that I'm probably on the low end of outraged media on this, but maybe because I'm not surprised at all. I think it would have been a good idea to look outside and try to bring something fresh in. But Mike Vrabel has his defense, and he's running his defense as long as he's a head coach. I mean, that's pretty obvious. I do think that we all need to acknowledge our limitations, and you touched on it. Like, I don't know right now how much of a slice of the blame pie Bowen gets for last year. Clearly, it was a big step down from Dean Pease, D coordinator, to whatever they were doing. And you know, Vrabel kind of told us at times during the year that Bowen was doing things. I mean, Bowen was the guy who talked to us weekly. So it's not like it was a bombshell that Vrabel said at the end Bowen did all the stuff. But I think it's a hard sell to fans to say, okay, now that's a promotion. Now you get promoted. Vrabel has been big on, you know, judge me on results. You know, judge the results. Well, if that's the case, this doesn't make sense. All that said, I think what this is saying is it's the players. If Vrabel were voting in our poll, it's very easy to guess which one he'd. And another thing is here, we want to separate Vrabel and John Robinson. I look at the Vic Beasley signing. I think that's Vrabel believing he can coach someone up to rediscover his game. Clowney, you're going to tell me Robinson did that and Vrabel? I mean, of course that was a – so I think Vrabel and Robinson share responsibility on the player situation.
Sure.
I also think there's no way this happens. Like, Vrabel's like, nah, man, Shane's my guy. And J-Rob's like, I don't know. I think they're probably in lockstep on this too. So what this is it's an incredible amount of negativity that you've brought on after going 11-5 and winning the division. That said, it's his guy. He knows what he does every day on a day-to-day basis. I do, like, if I'm voting in that poll, I'm easily going players too. Not saying the coaches don't deserve blame, not at all. Clearly, they missed Dean Pease. They missed having a DC. We heard about communication all year. So I would not sit here and say Shane Bowen was amazing last year and it was just the players screwed it up. But I think it's more a bad offseason, not having a pass rusher, spending $22.5 million on two guys who gave you nothing, getting rid of Casey, letting Logan Ryan go. You know, again, like, I get it, $10 million a year, too much. But all these personnel moves ended up being just brutal for them. And I do think that's a bigger issue than Shane Bowen as DC. That said, this is now kind of a Rubisky malarkey situation.
Yeah.
And if it goes bad next year, and this guy's 31-21 with an AFC title game and a division title, and yet I sense fans are very angry with him.
I'm very angry with this decision. I'm not very angry with Mike Vrabel, head coach of the Tennessee Titans. I'm very angry with this decision. And you brought up results. I went through every category. There are many other categories where they got decisively worse between 2019 and 2020. And the other thing is, when you watched that defense, you could not trust them to do anything. You couldn't trust Kevin Byard to make a big play. Kevin Byard went all season without really making that big of a difference. Rashawn Evans was a shell of himself. Both of them looked like turnstiles at times. And I kept thinking, that has to be whatever is going on behind the scenes when it comes to the coordination or communication that Kevin Byard repeatedly brought up after every single game when that defense did not look good.
Other guys too, but yeah, him especially.
Yeah. And anyone with a brain watching the Titans last season, by about mid-November, knew that this team was not a Super Bowl contender because of that defense. That despite the great offense that they had with Derrick Henry rushing for 2,000, with Ryan Tannehill being efficient, with A.J. Brown being dominant when he was able to play. Their defense could not stop a nosebleed, and that was the reason why they were never really a true Super Bowl contender in anyone's mind. And they had one of the worst defenses to ever make the playoffs, especially in the last 20 years. What was the stat? 183rd out of 184 defenses in like the last 16 years.
Right.
Something like
and
that.
Tied for the lowest number of sacks with the 79 Broncos for a playoff team. Like you said, worst third down defense ever. Now that's a stat that's a 30-year-old stat, but still.
And I hear what you're saying about the offseason moves, but the optics of this decision do not look good. When Mike Vrabel a few weeks ago comes out and says that Shane Bowen essentially had his hands all over this defense, he was running everything, and then he promotes Bowen after everything that we just discussed, how everything went downhill with this defense, and then, oh yeah, Shane, you get a promotion. That does not look good. Vrabel better not be getting this one wrong.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, Bowen is a target next year. That's what he is. Now, you could say maybe the point of this year, and I do think there's some truth to this, not giving him the title was to sort of ease him in and not let him be that guy, because, of course, people are going to be like, who's following up Dean Pease? But now the way things have gone, I think it's almost now next year way more of a – I mean, people aren't going to have an open mind about Shane Bowen.
No.
And anything that goes poorly, it's on Shane Bowen.
I'm raising my hand.
Yeah.
I mean,
I get it.
They can do whatever personnel-wise. If in the first four or five games next year they still can't breathe on a quarterback, I'm blaming Shane Bowen. And I'm blaming Mike Vrabel for letting Shane Bowen be the DC.
And the thing is, I think you're right about – it is. It's like, people talk about marrying the pass rush and the coverage. It just didn't look like a connected defense. And when you have veterans who have played at a certain level and they go here, then whose fault is that? Now, it could be, okay, it's so bad in this area, you got to compensate, they're trying to do too much, all that stuff. But at some point you have to look at the coaching and say, what is different? Why was Dean Pease able to get 43 sacks out of the same struggles in terms of not having difference makers on the edge?
I mean, he had Cameron Wake, Harold Landry, obviously, but Cameron Wake.
For a couple games.
Kamale Correa, that was another one. What truly went down with Correa? That could have been another Mike Vrabel my way or the highway type situation, and Correa exit stage left. Didn't do anything in Jacksonville, but I'm sure he could have at least helped down the stretch when they had Clay Matthews 2.0 rushing the passer, which he actually got a few sacks.
He did.
Which,
Brooks Reed.
Bring back Brooks Reed. He can at least get to the quarterback.
But, you know, it's going to be – Shane Bowen is going to be the target of ire next year when things go poorly. So, hey, I mean, maybe you take outside linebackers off his plate and you say all you're doing is coordinating the defense. You have the title. This is your defense. This is your staff. Maybe that makes a big difference. But – it's not going to unless he has different players who can actually make plays.
Who can actually get to the quarterback.
That would be helpful.
Or tackle somebody.
Cover somebody.
Yeah. Well, a lot of those guys are going to be the same guys outside of the pass rush, you would assume, when it comes to covering people, tackling people. They just need to play better, but did they play worse, i.e. Kevin Byard and Rashawn Evans, because of the scheme change from Dean Pease to Vrabel/Bowen. Frederick on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Frederick says, I agree with you guys. Bowen sucks. They couldn't stop tissue paper from getting wet.
Never heard that one before.
That's a new one. Yeah, I don't think I've heard that one either.
If you just leave the tissue paper on the table, it won't get wet.
I mean, look, the defense all season last year was more screwed up than a soup sandwich.
Wait, what? Say that again?
The defense all last season was more screwed up than a soup sandwich.
Messy.
Have you heard this one before?
That one I have heard. I've heard plenty of times the soup sandwich, and that's an accurate assessment. That defense was definitely a soup sandwich. Nothing contained whatsoever.
Exactly.
I could call it an S dot 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 sandwich that's not soup, but yeah, we'll go with soup.
Yeah, we'll go with soup. 615-737-1025 if you want to call or text in your opinions on Shane Bowen. And Mike Vrabel better be getting this one right with Shane Bowen and OC right with Todd Downing. We'll explain why coming up next. He's Joe Rexroad. I'm Ryan Porth. In for Robbie Stanley this morning. You're listening to Robbie and Rexroad live on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app.
I heard years ago that the hiring of Todd Downing was, in fact, a big part of what eventually led to the demise of Jack Del Rio as the head coach. You're talking about an offensive coordinator that didn't have any experience, took over an offense that had an MVP candidate in 2016 and destroyed it. His play calling was inconsistent. There was never an identity to what they were trying to accomplish offensively. And alarmingly, every skill position player started to play worse. Like Amari Cooper declined in his 1 year. Michael Crabtree checked out in his year. Derek Carr, his numbers went down that year drastically. But most importantly, the offensive line was hot garbage, and it hadn't been in 2016. So Raiders fans went into 2017 legitimately with Super Bowl hopes, coming off of a 12-4 year where you thought, man, this is going to be the thing that takes us. We're going to be fine. And Jack Del Rio did not need to fire their existing offensive coordinator. So, this was a moment where the quarterback coach in Downing that has a great relationship with Derek Carr, and, you know, they share some elements in faith and outside of life. They were coming together, and it felt like it was a little bit of a, hey, we're doing this because we're going to bet on Downing early so that we can keep him here so that Carr will stay happy. Those were all the narratives around it. And it wasn't just a disaster. It was an abject disaster. It's one of the worst offenses I've seen in the Raiders as a Raiders fan in the last 10 years. So Downing's inability to get guys to just play, not even as well as they played the year before, but play with any discipline was stunning. So I hope that this is a different result. But I mean, I'm just shocked to see him get a second opportunity as bad as it was in 2017.
That was ESPN's Jason Fitz Friday afternoon with Stillman and Company talking about Todd Downing. ESPN's Jason Fitz, a noted Raiders fan, whether they're in Oakland or Las Vegas. He is a Raiders diehard. Not too high on Todd Downing as the Raiders OC in 2017, nor as the Titans OC coming up in 2021. Todd Downing elevated from tight ends coach to offensive coordinator Friday, along with Shane Bowen being elevated to defensive coordinator on Friday. First of all, with Downing, I see the merit of promoting within when the offense was so good. I know Downing did not excel as a play caller in Oakland in 2017, but the weapons that he should have in 2021 should dwarf what he had in Oakland. I mean, Derek Carr was coming off an injury. Marshawn Lynch was at the end of his career. I mean, their receivers, Amari Cooper, fine. Michael Crabtree at the end of his career. Jared Cook, who's, you know, an above-average tight end. I mean, those were their best receivers. I know the offense went from good to bad with him as OC, but I think there were a lot of factors there. I'm willing to give him a chance much more than Shane Bowen.
Not me. After listening to Fitz, I think we're freaking out about the wrong coordinator. Fire Downing! That was a pretty scathing review. I think a lot of Raiders fans feel that way. It's interesting because with both of these coordinators now, you have one season, one really bad season as your, I mean, that's what you're going on. Now, the difference with Downing to Bowen is, I mean, Bowen's first significant job really in football, he's sort of, you know, he's been a grad and he's been a defensive assistant, but his first significant job is OLB coach with the Titans, coming with Vrabel 2018. Downing has, you know, a background of working with Matthew Stafford, and he was his QB coach when he had his breakout year with the Lions. And obviously, I mean, he got that job because he was got a lot of credit for what he did with Carr as a QB coach. So he has a lot more to offer beyond that one bad year where you could say, okay, maybe Carr, broken leg, like you said. I mean, Crabtree had a great year before, so I don't know what happened with him. That was
sure.
Honestly, Cooper too. But it is concerning, and it makes me think of Arthur Smith, because a lot of the discussion about Arthur Smith as OC and then into the head coach market was, look at all the skill guys, look at how they all improved under Arthur Smith. You know, it's this guy, this guy, this guy. Obviously, there's a collective element there. Everyone rises with the ship, but you flip it around with Downing. It's like, how did all of these elements of that offense all struggle like that when you snap a finger, and then they all get fired and people blame him? I still think it's just way less of a risk to do this because, like you said, they have a really good thing going. He was on the staff. The tight ends coach promotion worked last time, and this promotion is of a guy with a bigger resume, certainly, than Arthur Smith. so I think both sides, though, it's you're trying to follow Arthur Smith, and Bowen this last year was trying to follow Dean Pease, and those guys are in Atlanta.
And maybe Vrabel was just looking out for his boy and didn't want to give him the title of DC, so that, I don't know, took the pressure off of him a little bit. But whatever pressure
that's
he was trying...
That's a Belichick type of move.
Whatever pressure he was trying to take off of Bowen, if that is the case, Bowen now has an immense amount of pressure on him after the way this defense played last season. And in both cases, Vrabel better have gotten this right with Downing and with Bowen. Because if he did not, if he swung and missed on one or both of these coordinators, it's going to be costly to this Titans team. It probably means that they don't win the AFC South next season if he swung and missed, certainly on both. If Downing's fine but the defense still stinks, maybe they can still win the division. But if he misses on both of these coordinators, it could mean they don't make the playoffs. And overall, just looking at the prime of Ryan Tannehill and Derrick Henry's careers, you cannot waste another prime season for their careers. I mean, Derrick Henry runs for 2K, and they don't win a playoff game. Ryan Tannehill has another really standout season. He doesn't rise to the occasion in the playoffs, and you don't know how many more years you're going to get out of Ryan Tannehill that have been like the last season and a half. So Mike Vrabel better have gotten this right. Whether it's a single, a double, a triple, he better not have struck out on these two coordinators, or else it is going to be costly for this Titans team.
Yeah. No, I mean, look, it's 11-5, won a division, and yet there's palpable anger among Titans fans. But again, I think that's also because when one side of the ball is so bad and you know that you are squandering something that's so special on the other side, I think it makes it harder to enjoy the whole thing. So, look, Vrabel is very much an internal hire guy. And he doesn't have, like, some huge catalog. He doesn't, like, you know, it's a pretty tight group. At some point, you got to step more outside that. I mean, at some point, it's like, if you're going to succeed, frankly, you're going to keep getting guys hired away. But you have, I thought this was an opportunity, especially, again, defensively, to do that. But Vrabel, I mean, on that side of the ball, I think it's even more likely that it's going to be his people because he wants to do his stuff. He's a defensive guy. With Downing, I'm willing to, you know, look at that 2017 season and say, hey, maybe you also learned from it. He has talked about that in the past, about like not even really understanding everything about the coordinator. And then you're in there and it's like, you know, drinking from a fire hose. And I'm sure it was somewhat like that with Bowen this year. But for both of them now, there's high pressure. But I agree with you. Like, Shane Bowen is a guy who, now this was like Keith Carter last year, who now all of a sudden everybody's like, this guy's amazing, right? But that's who he's going to be. I mean, he's the guy that everyone is looking at, like, is it your fault? We're waiting for it to be your fault. And that's a lot of pressure. I mean, So I think you're probably right that was Vrabel's plan, but it is the way it has all unfolded has doubled the pressure on him.
It has essentially backfired on Vrabel if that was the plan. Let's go to the text line real quick. Tyler from Berry Hill says, to be fair to Shane Bowen, I think Vrabel wanted Pease back, or he really wanted Kerry Coombs to eventually be the defensive coordinator before he left, so Vrabel wanted to keep things consistent. Plus, we didn't get bounced from the playoffs because of the defense, and I think that was a big benefit to Bowen. Tyler from Berry Hill on the text line. Driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com.
So the one good performance changed everything? Saved everything?
I can't believe that. I mean,
I'm sure it didn't hurt. Because they did play well in the playoff game.
I feel like this was going to happen all along. I mean, did we really get a lot of reports come out in the last couple weeks that they were interviewing this guy or that guy for DC?
I heard two people absolutely interviewed.
Terrell Austin,
one
right?
was Terrell Austin. One was Pep Hamilton. The Rooney Rule has been expanded that teams must interview at least one minority coach for coordinator jobs now, not just head coaching jobs. You look at the whole thing, and it's like, okay, so did they just satisfy the Rooney Rule and then go with what
they
were going to do?
And then promote from within?
Kind of looks that way.
A little bit. So, I don't know. I can't believe – I expected Bowen, but that doesn't make it any – doesn't make it feel any better. I cannot believe that they're going to go into 2021 with Shane Bowen being promoted.
It's your reality. It's the reality for the Titans. He's the guy. He's the guy under fire now.
The defense better not suck next year. Coming up next, there was a big trade in the NFL Saturday night, and we'll react to it. Did the Rams or the Lions win the trade of two former number one overall picks in the NFL draft? We'll get to that next. He's Joe Rexroad. I'm Ryan Porth. In for Robbie Stanley this morning. It is ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app.